Right now, hidden in the walls of, well, whatever building you're sitting in, there's this simple, flat piece of metal fighting a completely silent, high-stakes battle against the laws of thermodynamics. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so our mission today is to unpack this highly technical engineering document about a piece of modern infrastructure that you almost never see, but, I mean, you literally cannot live without. The copper bus bar.
It really is the unsung hero of the electrical world. Like, if you look at the complex grid that keeps our modern lives running, this simple strip of metal is basically the foundation holding it all together.
Okay, let's unpack this, because to the untrained eye, a bus bar sounds incredibly boring.
Right, yeah.
It's just, you know, flat bar of copper. But reading through this source material, it becomes abundantly clear that this basic-looking strip is actually the critical spine that distributes massive amounts of electrical current inside switchgear, panel boards, you name it. It is essentially the beating heart of any large building's power system.
And, you know, the reason engineers overwhelmingly choose copper for this vital job, it comes down to a few very specific, very powerful physical properties. The document highlights high conductivity copper, and its electrical conductivity is absolutely staggering.
Okay.
The reference value they use is about 58 megasiemens per meter at 20 degrees Celsius.
Wait, I have to pause you right there. Megasiemens per meter. For those of us who aren't, you know, electrical engineers, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, it sounds like jargon, right?
Like, how does that compare to water flowing through a pipe or something?
Well, think of it this way. If electrical resistance is the friction that slows electricity down, conductance is the exact opposite. It's the slipperiness of the material.
Okay.
So a Siemens is just a unit measuring how easily the current flows. So 58 megasiemens means copper is like a massive, perfectly smooth, frictionless pipe.
Got it.
In practical terms, it means designers can push an astronomical amount of power through a very small, remarkably compact metal profile, all without losing that energy to resistance.
So you basically get maximum power in minimum space.
Precisely. And beyond just moving the electricity, copper possesses incredible mechanical strength. Like, when you are building a system that has to last for decades, you need joints that won't degrade.
Right, because it's in a wall for 50 years.
Exactly. Copper offers highly reliable joint performance when you bolt or weld pieces together. It doesn't easily warp or succumb to the pressures of the heavy electrical load.
Which I think sets up the central mystery of the document we're looking at today. When I first started reading this, I made an assumption that I think, honestly, a lot of people would make.
What was that?
Well, if you have a chunk of copper, like a very specific measurable piece of metal, shouldn't its current rating simply be a fixed property?
Yeah.
Like, if you have a bar of a certain size, shouldn't it always universally carry the exact same amount of electricity?
It is the most logical assumption you could make, and the engineering manual makes it very clear that this assumption is entirely, completely wrong.
See, I have to push back on this a little bit, just on behalf of anyone listening who likes the physical world to be predictable.
Fair enough.
Because if a bus bar is essentially a highway for electricity, well, a four-lane highway always holds four lanes of cars. Doesn't matter if that highway is built in freezing Alaska or sweltering Florida, right? Four lanes are four lanes. So why doesn't a 25 by 5 millimeter bar of copper always hold the exact same number of amps?
Your highway analogy is a great starting point, but here is where the physics actually force the analogy to break down.
Okay.
Moving massive amounts of electricity isn't just about traffic flow. It is fundamentally a battle of thermodynamics. It is a constant, violent tug of war between heat generation and heat removal.
Wait, are we talking about heat coming from the electricity itself?
We are, yeah. It's a phenomenon called Joule heating. Even in a highly conductive material like copper, there is a tiny bit of resistance.
Right.
And as massive electrical current flows through the copper, that tiny friction generates heat. And, well, that heat has to go somewhere.
Because it doesn't.
If it can't escape into the air, it just builds up in the metal. Therefore, the current rating of a bus bar changes drastically based on its physical dimensions, the ambient temperature of the room it's in, how much cooling airflow it gets.
And the specific design of the metal or plastic enclosure might be trapped inside.
Right. Exactly.
Let's look at the baseline current rating table from the source.
Yeah.
Because even in a perfect laboratory-style scenario, the numbers are just massive. The text notes that a modest 25 by 5 millimeter flat bar, which is tiny, like an inch wide and less than a quarter inch thick, can handle about 415 amps at a 35 degrees Celsius temperature rise.
Yeah, and just to put that 415 amps into perspective, a typical large modern house might have a 200 amp service to run the entire property.
Wow.
You know, the air conditioning, the ovens, the lights, everything. This tiny piece of metal is carrying more than double that.
That's wild to visualize. And then you step up to a beefier 40 by 10 millimeter bar, and the table says it can push 1,020 amps. But as I was reading this table, I noticed there are two different columns for something they call delta T. There's a 35 degrees Celsius delta T column and a 50 degree Celsius delta T column. What exactly is the delta T measuring?
What's fascinating here is that delta T isn't the temperature of the room itself. It stands for temperature rise.
Oh, like the change in temperature.
Literally, yeah. How much hotter the copper gets compared to the surrounding air. The baseline engineering standard assumes a room temperature or ambient temperature of 40 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
So a delta T of 35 degrees means the bar itself is generating enough heat to reach 75 degrees Celsius.
Okay, so the 50 degree delta T column means the engineer is pushing the metal even harder, allowing it to heat up to 90 degrees Celsius.
You've hit the nail on the head. And the table shows that if you allow the bar to run hotter, if you push that limit to a 50 degree rise, it can carry significantly more current. You are basically squeezing more juice out of the same piece of metal.
But there has to be a catch.
There is a massive catch. Pushing that extra heat drastically increases the physical stress on the entire system. Think about what heat does to materials over time.
They expand, right.
Metal expands when it gets hot and shrinks when it cools down. If your bus bar is heating up to 90 degrees every single day during peak load and cooling down every night, that constant thermal expansion and contraction will literally wiggle bolted joints loose over time.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about the mechanical movement of the metal. Like, it's literally shifting.
It is. And it's not just the metal. A 90-degree bar is slowly baking the plastic insulation wrapped around it. It's radiating heat onto sensitive electronic breakers sitting nearby. Heat is, honestly, the ultimate enemy of longevity in electrical systems.
So those values in the table were essentially a best-case scenario. A single flat bar mounted in still air in a perfectly controlled 40-degree room.
Right.
But we know what these bars can do in a perfect laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when they are crammed into a hot, dusty, real-world electrical closet in the basement of a skyscraper?
That is where the reality of engineering hits hard, and where the math gets much more complicated. Because the environment dictates the physics, an engineer must introduce what are called derating factors.
Derating, it sounds like a penalty.
It is essentially a mathematical penalty box for real-world conditions. Derating is the crucial step used to adjust those perfect theoretical table values down to safe, realistic numbers.
Right.
The core formula requires taking your perfect table current and multiplying it by an ambient temperature factor, a stacking factor, and an installation factor.
I want to walk through these penalties because the temperature ones really stood out to me. The baseline is 40 degrees Celsius. Now, if your electrical room happens to be a heavily air-conditioned 25 degrees Celsius,
mm-hmm.
the document actually gives you a reward.
Yep.
You get a 1.10 bonus multiplier. Mm-hmm. Because the room is cold, it absorbs heat faster, meaning you can safely run 10% more power through the bar.
Exactly. You have given the system more thermal headroom to breathe.
But if that electrical room is sweltering, say it's 60 degrees Celsius, suddenly you suffer a 0.85 penalty. Your power capacity drops by 15% simply because the air around the bar is already too hot to absorb the heat the copper is generating.
And ambient temperature is only half the battle, too. The physical installation is just as critical.
Oh, sure.
An open, exposed bar releases heat freely from its flat faces and its thin edges. But in the real world, you rarely leave live copper exposed. You put that bar inside a compact, enclosed metal switchgear. You surround it with breakers, thick cable ducts, plastic safety barriers.
It's trapped.
Exactly. Its ability to dissipate heat drops sharply, requiring another harsh derating multiplier to keep the system safe.
Which brings us to the stacking factor. This is the concept I found, honestly, the most fascinating in the entire document.
Oh, yeah. It's a big one.
If you are an engineer and you need to move more power, the most logical step is to just put multiple bars next to each other, running them in parallel. But the text warns that the math does not scale perfectly. I was thinking about this, and tell me if this analogy works. It feels a lot like the difference between sweating in a crowded room versus sweating alone in a breeze.
That is a brilliant way to visualize the thermodynamics, actually.
Because if you are standing alone in an open field, the breeze easily evaporates your sweat and cools you down.
Right.
but if you are packed shoulder to shoulder with hundreds of other people in a crowded concert venue, you can't cool off. The person next to you is radiating body heat right back at you, blocking your ability to shed your own heat.
That is exactly what happens to copper. When you stack two copper bars side by side with a small gap between them, you do not simply double your cooling capacity. The inner faces of those bars, the flat sides facing each other, are now blocked from the open air.
Okay.
They are just radiating intense heat directly at each other.
So they stay hotter? Longer?
Yes. The numbers in the text illustrate this penalty perfectly. Let's look at a large 80 by 10 millimeter bar. On its own, under baseline conditions, it can carry an impressive 1,740 amps. Now, let's say a project needs more capacity, so you stacked two of them together in parallel.
Well, basic logic says you just multiply 1,740 by 2, giving you 3,480 amps.
But the laws of thermodynamics veto that basic logic. Because those inner surfaces lose their ability to shed heat, the engineering standard requires you to multiply your total by a 0.90 stacking factor per bar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you lose 10% of your capacity right off the top. Your actual real-world capacity is 3,132 amps, not 3,480.
That is a massive drop in efficiency.
And the more metal you stack, the worse the penalty gets. Mm. If you stack four bars together to carry a massive load, the efficiency plummets to a 0.75 factor per bar.
Right.
You are losing 25% of your theoretical electrical capacity simply because the inner bars are suffocating and cannot breathe.
So what does this all mean for the actual person designing the system? I want to set up a specific scenario for you.
All right, let's hear it.
Let's say I'm an electrical engineer. I have a new building project, and I need to push a continuous load of 630 amps through an electrical panel. The panel is fully enclosed, and it sits in a room that runs hot at 35 degrees Celsius. Due to space constraints, I have to use two stacked copper bars.
Okay, tough constraints.
Right. So I pull out two 25 by 5 millimeter bars, I run all my derating math, I take the base rating, I apply the penalty for the 45 degree heat, and I apply the penalty for stacking two bars. My spreadsheet says those two bars, after all the penalties, can carry 725 amps.
Which comfortably clears the 630 amps you need.
Exactly. The spreadsheet turns green, my math checks out, I sign off on the design, build the panel, and go home. I'm good to go, I'm safe, right?
I'm going to stop you right there, because what you just described is what the industry calls the table trap, and it is incredibly dangerous.
Oh.
You cannot just rely on the derated ampacity table to guarantee a safe design. You also have to calculate a completely different metric called current density.
Current density. So rather than total load, this is measuring how much current is being packed into a specific physical space.
Yes. It is measured in amps per square millimeter. Even if a thick stack of bars can technically carry a heavy load without instantly melting down, forcing too high a current density through the metal causes long-term nightmares.
Why is density so destructive? Like, what does it actually do?
Well, because it creates localized hotspots and microscopic electrical stress. Over months and years, high density leads to accelerated oxidation of the copper surface.
Okay.
That oxidation acts like an insulator, which drives the heat up even further. It causes dangerous voltage drops across the system, and eventually, catastrophic failure at the bolted joints.
It sounds like having an old cast iron water pipe. The pipe technically won't burst today, but if you crank the water pressure intensely high, the fittings are guaranteed to start leaking eventually because they just can't handle the localized stress.
I'm completely with you on that analogy. So let's crunch the density numbers on your hypothetical 630 amp project.
Okay, let's do it.
You are pushing 630 amps through two bars that each have a cross-section of 125 square millimeters. Your total physical area is 250 square millimeters. If we divide 630 amps by 250 square millimeters, we get a current density of 2.52 amps per square millimeter.
And I take it that is a failing grade.
A massive failure.
Wow.
For an enclosed switchgear, the recommended conservative limit for current density is between 1.2 and 1.8 amps per square millimeter. Your design of 2.52 is running way too hot for an enclosed space. The smart engineering move here, really the only safe move, is to upgrade to two 40 by 5 millimeter bars.
Just adding more physical metal to spread the load out.
Yes. That upgrade gives you 400 square millimeters of total area. When we run the math again, your density drops down to a very safe, comfortable 1.58 amps per square millimeter. It restores your thermal margin and guarantees the joints will survive for decades.
So by managing the derating factors and avoiding the current density trap, we've solved the problem of the long-term continuous load. We've mastered the daily grind of the power system. But, you know, all of this assumes everything is operating normally.
Right.
Here's where it gets really interesting. What happens in the terrifying fraction of a second when something goes wrong?
Now we enter the worst-case scenario for any infrastructure. The short circuit.
Because I imagine a short circuit fault hitting this delicate thermodynamic balance, like a high-speed train derailment, hitting a quiet intersection.
Yeah, that's a good way to picture it.
Normally you have a steady, predictable stream of traffic, and then suddenly hundreds of thousands of pounds of kinetic energy just smash into the infrastructure. The metal has to physically withstand the impact without shattering or melting.
That captures the violence of it perfectly. Bus bars don't just exist to carry a nice, polite, steady load day in and day out. They are legally and fundamentally required to survive the violent thermal and mechanical shock of a fault current.
Wow.
When a short circuit happens, maybe a backhoe digs through a main line outside, or a major component fails, a massive instantaneous spike of energy surges through the copper.
And the standard requires the metal to just take the hit.
It has to hold the line. There is a strict international standard for this, IEC 608651, which governs the mechanical and thermal effects. To pass, engineers have to perform what is called an adiabatic thermal check.
Adiabatic. Okay, I remember my physics correctly. An adiabatic process means heat is being added to a system so incredibly fast that there's zero time for it to escape or radiate into the environment.
Exactly.
The metal is completely on its own. It has to absorb every single joule of energy instantly.
That is the exact mechanism at play. The standard uses a formula, I squared T equals K squared S squared. I won't bore you with the raw algebra, but...
Probably for the best.
But the crucial thing to understand here is the proportional relationship. Notice how the current, the I, is squared. That means the heat generated doesn't just scale up linearly. If the current doubles, the heat generation quadruples. A short circuit fault creates a literal explosion of trapped heat inside the copper.
The source text actually offers a specific mind-bending example of this math. Let's look at a copper bus bar with a 500 square millimeter cross section. Can you walk us through what happens to this bar during a 1 second short circuit?
I would love to. Let's plug the copper material constants into that formula to see exactly how much of a surge this 500 square millimeter bar can survive for exactly 1 second. You know, the K constant is 141 for copper here. When we calculate the threshold, the result is 70,500 amps.
70,500 amps.
For 1 full second, that single bar of copper can absorb a catastrophic surge of over 70,000 amps. During that 1 second, its internal temperature spikes violently from a cool 20 degrees Celsius all the way to 200 degrees Celsius.
But wait, how does it not instantly turn into a puddle of liquid metal at 200 degrees?
This is exactly why copper is the gold standard. 200 degrees Celsius is incredibly hot for the plastic insulation around the bar, sure, but the melting point of elemental copper is nearly 1100 degrees Celsius.
Oh, wow, so it's not even close.
Not even close. The copper barely even wants to sweat structurally. It acts as an unbreakable thermal sponge. It just takes the punch, holds the physical line, and buys the system exactly enough time for the heavy safety breakers to trip and shut the power grid down safely.
That is a godlike level of electrical capability. It's the ultimate safety net.
Truly.
But, you know, learning that it can take a 70,000 amp punch introduces a massive financial question. Building an entire power grid out of a material this highly engineered and this heavy has to be phenomenally expensive. So I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
Why not use a cheaper metal?
Right.
I know aluminum is also used in power infrastructure. Why wouldn't an engineer just save the client millions of dollars and build the bus bars out of aluminum?
It is the ultimate engineering trade-off, and you are completely right. This debate happens every single day in procurement offices around the world. Aluminum is significantly cheaper. It also has a major physical advantage when you are actually constructing the building. It is about 3 times lighter than copper.
Oh, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, if you are building a massive installation where the structural weight of the metal is a real concern, aluminum is a very tempting alternative.
But earlier, you emphasized copper's staggering 58 mega Siemens conductivity. How does aluminum stack up against that?
There is the catch. Aluminum's conductivity is only about 35 mega Siemens per meter. It is far less efficient at actually moving the electricity.
So to carry the exact same electrical load safely, without overheating, an aluminum bar has to be physically larger.
Considerably larger, yes. To match copper's performance, an aluminum bus bar needs to have about 1.6 times more physical cross-sectional area.
So it's a third of the weight, but it takes up over 50% more space in the room.
Yes. And the problems don't stop at physical size either. Aluminum has notorious chemical issues, particularly at the joints. When aluminum is exposed to air, it instantly forms a microscopic layer of oxidation.
Okay.
That oxide layer is highly resistive to electricity. Furthermore, if you bolt aluminum directly to other metals, you invite galvanic corrosion, which literally eats the metal away over time.
Which means your joints fail, your current density skyrockets, and the system burns down.
Exactly. To use aluminum safely, it requires special surface treatments, specialized bimetallic hardware, and meticulous preparation by the installers to ensure the joints won't oxidize and fail over a 20-year lifespan.
So just to summarize the verdict on this clash of materials, copper is the undisputed king of tight spaces. If you need a compact panel, incredibly low electrical resistance, and joints you can bolt together and trust with absolute long-term reliability, you just pay the premium for copper.
That is the consensus in the industry, yeah.
But if you're designing a massive project with plenty of physical room, say a sprawling outdoor solar installation or a huge industrial factory floor where space isn't an issue at all, but weight and budget are extremely tight, that's where aluminum steps in as a viable challenger.
You've summarized it perfectly. It is never just about picking the objectively best material in a vacuum. It is about analyzing the specific environmental, spatial, and financial constraints of the real-world project and choosing the material that balances all of those equations.
This has been such an unexpected journey today. We started this deep dive looking at what seemed like a boring, flat bar of metal. But we've uncovered this high-stakes, invisible world hidden right behind the drywall of our offices and homes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
A world of thermodynamics,
mm-hmm.
where engineers are constantly battling stacking factors, dodging the hidden traps of current density, and designing infrastructure robust enough to survive explosive 70,000 amp short circuits.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really highlights a profound truth about what engineering actually is. True expertise isn't just pulling a theoretical number off a baseline chart. Anyone can read a spreadsheet.
Right.
True expertise is understanding the mechanism behind the numbers. It's knowing how every single variable in an unpredictable environment, the ambient temperature, the lack of airflow, the molecular breakdown of a metal joint, how all of it interacts to compromise the safety of the whole system.
It's treating the power grid as a living, breathing thing that has to survive a messy, imperfect world, not just a clean laboratory test. Which brings us to a final lingering thought for you to take away today. Because this isn't just abstract math, this is the physical infrastructure that keeps modern civilization running.
And that infrastructure is aging.
Exactly. Think about a massive skyscraper or a city block constructed 30 or 40 years ago. When the engineers designed the copper bus bars hidden in those basements, they calculated their derating factors based on the historical ambient temperatures of the 1980s or 90s.
Right.
But our global climate is changing. The baseline temperatures are rising. The next time a sweltering, record-breaking summer heat wave hits your city, and millions of air conditioners kick on simultaneously, pushing the grid to its absolute limit, look at the lights above you. Ask yourself, is the aging copper hidden in the walls still operating safely within its thermal margin? Or have our rising global temperatures quietly erased the safety net those engineers built decades ago?
A question that fundamentally changes how you look at the infrastructure around you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey today. Mm-hmm. We love unpacking these hidden worlds with you.
Thanks for listening. Keep questioning the world around you.
Until next time, take care.